Well, good to see everybody here. And one person we are missing is Pastor Jeremy, who is recovering from gallbladder surgery, of all things. So I'm Pastor John, and if you are new to our podcast, welcome. But we also have a special guest, but why don't we go around to my left and Bryce, introduce yourself.
I'm Bryce Neuberger. I'm the youth director at Summit Ridge Church.
And our special guest today
is Kari Haug. Happy to be here.
Kari, it is great to have you. You're actually our very first special guest.
Wow.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
It's prestigious.
It is. So the emails will start flowing in. Now, but Kari, we've known each other for a couple of years now, and we met originally because we're both on the board for Hope Christian Health Center.
That's right.
And you've been there for a couple of years, number of years, and the church that was going at the time that kind of got started with doing the Hope Christian Health Center. Mm-hmm. Really, you were there in the inception and working through all of that, and mm-hmm. so you've been on the board, mm-hmm. and what is Hope Christian Health Center? Just real quickly on a side note.
Hope Christian Health Center is a federally qualified health clinic that has a Christian basis and focus in giving and providing holistic health care to its patients and community. And the vision for that was back in the day, we had folks from our church going to Haiti on missions trips and thought, you know, we have an underserved medical community here. Mm-hmm. Why can't we in Las Vegas serve instead of going all the way to Haiti all the time? Mm-hmm. And so the idea was to provide holistic health care for a community where we as the clinic and the providers would be invested in the community, and it would be a relationship back and forth instead of us providing care and they come and go. It's more of a relationship and a community.
We have an overwhelming amount of our patients that are Medicaid mm-hmm. patients, mm-hmm. A few Medicare, and just the underserved in a lot of ways mm-hmm. there in North Las Vegas and expanding. But I love the ministry there because we are the only Christian FQHC, Federally Qualified Healthcare Center, in Nevada. And what that means is that we intentionally want to put Christ forward. The reason why we're doing what we do to serve you is because of the love of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so I love that ministry. And that's what got me involved a couple of years ago on the board as well. So it's been great getting to know you, Kari, over the years, and I always have loved your input on the board. When you speak up, we're making decisions about, you know, hey, where do we need to go and where we need to head as a medical clinic to our community, and type of people that we hire, and all those kind of inputs that a board kind of helps direct. But today what we want to do is, and even as we're talking earlier, this is nothing new to the church, nothing new. What's new is there is this massive spotlight going on mm-hmm. In predominantly, I would say, in the Northeast. So we've got New York that has just passed some laws. But they're not the only state, which is surprising. Mm-hmm. And then we had just a week later, massively in the spotlight is the Virginia governor. And I think one of the things, and maybe we want to talk about this or not, but surprisingly with the Virginia governor is not to say that the latest issues on racism is not an issue and it's a major issue, but it has completely overshadowed the fact that the governor of Virginia a week ago, I don't know if knowingly or unknowingly, but was okay with virtually infanticide. Mm-hmm. And nobody's talking about that now. His biggest attention is, and understandably to some degree, is this issue of racism. But I just think the timing is fascinating to me that that's not the issue. Mm-hmm. Is you have a governor of mm-hmm. the United States of America that has just said...
And a doctor.
a pediatrician doctor, you know, on top of it, that is like, no, we'll have, you can have the baby and they'll try to make it comfortable and then make a decision with, an informed decision with the doctor of whether they keep the baby alive or not.
If you listen to that whole excerpt in its entirety,
you could
see how it was so comfortable for him, because that is not abnormal practice. That happens. Mm. That happens now. And so that is seen as given loving care somehow, mm-hmm. in some twisted view, to let the baby die. That happens now. Mm. It does.
Maybe one of the things too, Kari, that would be helpful is, it wasn't just Hope Christian Health Center, I mean, how we met, but you have quite a vast experience in the world of women's health and some of those things. What do you do and what's your involvement in all that?
Well, I'm a nurse. Vast experience was labor and delivery. Mm-hmm. And then I worked for one of the pregnancy medical clinics in town with a life-affirming focus. And our goal was to provide medical care, including pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, and nurse consultations to women seeking abortion or vulnerable mm-hmm. to abortion.
Yeah.
And so it would help them make an informed choice regarding their pregnancy. And now I work for a company that I'm a nurse educator, and so I educate people at these clinics, at pregnancy medical clinics, which are life-affirming clinics, in how to do what they do.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that now for a couple years.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as we got to know you, both Angela and I were both involved in that same clinic as well. But how many conversations we have with vulnerable mm-hmm. women and boyfriends or whatnot of considering terminating mm-hmm. Their pregnancy. So today we really want to put our focus and attention on the abortion issue mm-hmm. that is in our country. We're looking at a staggering number of 60 million abortions since 1973. Mm-hmm. The primary abortion clinic of Planned Parenthood that is becoming all the more open to what they do. Their new president, Dr. Lena, has come out and said, this is our primary objective. And yet all of this is under the guise of reproductive health.
And women's care, abortion care. Putting those words together.
Oh gosh. So, I guess part of what I struggle with is, one, I think there's a piece of like, let's talk about abortion, but also trying to find the balance of what about those who have gone through abortion, because mm-hmm. my concern and my care mm-hmm. of those who are feeling the weight of that. Guilt and shame that is never talked about virtually, certainly never talked about within the medical field in an abortion. Like, hey, do you recognize this is what you're going to experience down the road? It's never talked about, obviously. Mm-hmm. But how do we care on that? And then my big picture is, so we have the things going on in New York. We have the debates, which was... The bill was put aside for now in Virginia, but how's the church supposed to respond? What are we supposed to do? And maybe that's part of why the church hasn't completely engaged, but maybe we've just turned a blind eye. And something you even said earlier, Kari, is that the Catholic Church has significantly stepped up although I'd say there's a huge problem in New York that they haven't stepped up to take.
Cuomo is Catholic.
Cuomo, who's Catholic, and they're still like, hey, still come, still receive the sacraments. Yeah. You're still part of the church. And like, talk about hypocrisy.
Yeah.
But overall, yes, the Catholic Church has definitely stepped up. So I guess those are my big questions, and what maybe in our time together we can kind of unpack a little bit and things. Anybody want to jump in on any one of those points?
Well, I think primarily, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot more options, but I think primarily one of the foremost ways that the church responds to things like that is through relationships, active, caring, non-blind eye relationships. I think fondly of my wife who had, when we were much younger, she had a friend who was a teenager who had pregnancy outside of marriage, and she was some guy that was just a random guy, and she was going to abort the baby, you know? And, you know, my wife never wants to take credit for anything, but she knew about this because she was involved, because she cared, because she was... What we're encouraged to do in Christian unity and through the Great Commission and through all of that is to be involved, you know, not just be reactionary, but, you know, her finger was on the pulse. She could see what was on the radar because her friend was on her radar, you know, and this was a friend who she had kind of had a falling out with, but she continued to care and be involved because she knew her friend was going through things, and her friend went to get an abortion. Went to get it was early on, and so she was going to grab a pill or something that was just going to, you know, kill the baby. She didn't have an ID because she was so young. She didn't have a driver's license. And so she left to try and figure out some sort of form of ID, never ended up going back. And a lot of times that's what you'll see too with these abortions is if you can just interrupt, you know, the women and get them to think about what's happening, what this is. A lot of them never go through with it. And now on Facebook, she pops up on our feed every so often with her and her now 3-4-year-old, maybe 6-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And just how much she puts on these posts, like, he's my world, and mm-hmm. how much she loves him, and all these pictures of them. Mm-hmm. And every time I see that, you know, it's like this, when I hear someone having an abortion, it's a flash forward to the future of like, imagine. Imagine if no one had tried to stop her. Imagine if no one had talked to her. And so while I think there's a lot of things we can do as a church organization, and there's a lot of things you can donate to and get involved with, I think our base, simplest way to make the world a better place and to speak into these issues is to be involved in the world. Just have some skin in the game.
Mm. Kari?
I completely agree. I think there's no five-step process to eliminate the need for abortion in the United States. There's no, we could sit here and make people feel really guilty, but mm-hmm. we all know that without Christ, that's all we have, right? Mm-hmm. And so we need to focus on the gospel and relationships and how the Holy Spirit is leading you. Maybe he is leading you to be involved with the local pregnancy medical clinic. Maybe he is leading you to be involved with sidewalk counseling or different things. But I agree. This topic is pervasive. And so whether or not you know it, it is affecting your family. It is affecting your extended family. It is affecting friends. And so just being open and being able to talk about it and formulate relationships where that is okay to talk about those things is definitely the best. It all has to come back to the gospel.
Mm. So what does the church do? We need to talk about the where we stand in terms of abortion? Is that...
That'd
maybe
be helpful. Sure.
Not just assume.
Yeah.
Right.
Where do we stand as believers, as a Christian? I don't know if I'm supposed to state that or not, but Corey, I look to you.
Well, I'm against it.
But at what point, right?
Yeah. I mean,
because
right,
the debate today is, we're talking about late-term abortions, which was put into the law back in 73 with Roe v. Wade, right? Mm-hmm. And then brought in and clarified all the more just a little bit later.
States have expanded it.
So
yeah, states have expanded it.
And New York has pushed to be able to put this on because there's concern now that we may be able to backtrack on Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court, but it wouldn't change the law in New York. Am I
correct
on the right track?
Correct. And I think another aspect of this is they have changed the requirements for late-term abortion to not include three doctors anymore.
Yes.
Making it easier to obtain. And you don't have to be a trained OB doctor, if you will. You could be a dentist, a chiropractor. And when you think about the message that they love women, love and care for women, and therefore access is the most important thing. If you are finding trouble finding doctors who are willing to perform abortions, which is at the heart of that, then think about it. If you're having trouble finding doctors to do a lumpectomy or a mastectomy, do you then open up that procedure to chiropractors and dentists? Because you love women so much? No.
Insanity.
It really is. It's a surgical procedure. So why would you then reduce the competency level or the requirements for that procedure because of access?
Yeah. So Kermit Gosnell, awful. I mean, just abhorrent, would no longer have been broken the law.
Can I just tell folks on the podcast that the video comes out tomorrow?
Does it?
On DVD.
Okay.
And so Gosnell, The Untold Story, that DVD is coming out, and the book is already out, and that's entitled Gosnell, The Most Prolific Serial Killer in America, or something to that effect. But powerful reads, quick reads, it won't take you long, but it really helps you grasp the lack of oversight and the lack of, oversight on abortion in the industry in the United States for fear of restricting access. And so that's something that things are happening that we have no idea because there's no oversight. There's nobody going in and monitoring. There's nobody going in and making sure that they're doing things. I know I say appropriate, like, How could it be appropriate?
There's an appropriate way.
But,
well, it's all under this umbrella of women's health. We're caring for the woman, and it's the woman's choice.
Right. Yeah.
This is the mother's choice whether she should keep this. And so from a Christian perspective, and I'm going to say not just our church perspective, but this would be a evangelical Christian perspective period that's been going on since the very beginning here, is that we would hold to the fact that at the moment of conception, the moment of conception is life, and so to do anything to harm that life is to take a life. And so whether that life is, from the moment of conception to 3 months, 6 months, to now 6 months old out of the womb to 46 years old, they're all still life, just maturing and getting older as they go. That's all the difference is. So to take that life is literally to take that life. And it just seems all the more unconscionable to think that you would, when we start talking about late-term abortion, it seems maybe typically a person maybe can come to the conclusion and goes, oh, well, that fetus couldn't survive on its own, so that makes sense that way. But then late-term abortion, that fetus could live on
its own. Well, let's talk about that, John, because when we say can't survive on its own, show me a baby that can survive on its own. No baby. All babies are placed under the care and supervision and compassion of an adult. All babies. And when you talk about baby having a terminal diagnosis or a fatal diagnosis, turns out we all do. There's 100% death rate. It's just a matter of timing. And so do you take, if somebody has a diagnosis of cancer and they are predicted by the physician to mm-hmm. die within a month, mm-hmm. or a diagnosis of cancer, and they're predicted to die within 5 years, is the life that is predicted to be a month less valuable, and therefore put them out of their misery, quote unquote, so that they then we should take that life, because now they're a burden on society, they're taking up resources, they are taking up valuable medical care, right? So it's the same kind of thing as in the womb. What is the difference, right? Yeah, so if they are, if they do have a terminal diagnosis, what is the harm in letting them live out every breath that God has given them, whether it be 5 minutes, an hour, 2 hours? And there's talk about, well, the mother will be harmed because the mother is watching her baby suffer. That is not what the evidence shows, because of the mourning process and because of the grieving process, to deny and to interrupt that with abortion is not helpful for the mother. It's not helpful for the family. Instead, to let them grieve, let them go through the process, give them the loving, compassionate care as they grieve the death of their baby. And then the other one that they always throw out there is health of the mother. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as an emergency abortion. There's no such thing.
If but you what if know, I took a pill?
We're talking about late term, correct?
Okay. Yep.
Okay. So we can talk about the early in a little bit, but as far as a late term, the reasons that they give for a late term is a terminal diagnosis, which we talked about. Yes. The baby's going to die anyway. Well, the baby's alive and everybody dies at some point.
Yeah.
And then the other one is for the health of the mother or the well-being of the mother. No mother goes into the hospital with severe preeclampsia or any other life-threatening condition, and they go, we need to do an emergency abortion today.
Yeah.
What do they say instead?
We do an emergency C-section.
Ah, a C-section is an option.
Right. Because an abortion at that late stage takes 2 to 3 days.
Yes.
Because they have to actually inject and stop the baby's heart and then go through the labor process with mom. So it's not an emergency procedure.
You are still delivering.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The only difference is how many pieces the baby comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling, but I think that's a huge point even early on, even late-term abortions that we're talking about, is how precious that life is from the very beginning, but we get that confused.
Yeah.
That's why you're here, Kari, because you bring out these aspects and pieces of the fact that that life is precious from the very beginning all the way through, and clearly, that's where we stand as a church, and then as because we're believers, and that's what God says. God created life; He knit us together, and that was God who breathed life.
And whether it's late term or early term, what we were just talking about is there's an apologetic argument called the sled test, and that is the D, which is dependency in the sled test, but it's size, level of development, environment, and dependency is the sled test that people use to justify abortions. They say, well, it's so insignificant, so early term abortions is so insignificantly small that it doesn't matter. And so with the sled test, it's like, okay, well, let's look at that, you know? So I recently heard a professor of apologetics speaking, Robbie Lashua, and he was talking about how, like, the idea is that a toddler compared to like Shaq, you know, or, you know, it's like, okay, well, look at that toddler. And to be honest, the toddler is underdeveloped too. So, you know, is that insignificant? Well, no, of course not. Okay, well, then in the same sense, then why would you say that just because a baby in a womb is smaller?
Yeah.
So size doesn't matter. And then you have...
Horton confirmed that, didn't he?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
A person is a person. No matter how small.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what happened to that movie?
Yeah. That's like become a mantra for me every time I see that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then you have the level of dependency, level of development, which is again the same thing. The toddler's a lot less developed, or you have people born with birth defects. You have people who even then, maybe lost limbs in war or the case, and because they aren't developed as well as someone else, would you kill that person? Well, no, of course not. In fact, there is a study, I think, came out in Switzerland that they said we have eradicated, they said we've eradicated Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And they were putting this out as like promotion, but really all they've done is they've aborted all the babies with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah.
Well, and even, I think it's even difficult, and it's beyond what we're talking about today, but when you say, of course we wouldn't do that, but it those are the debates that are going on in the Netherlands, particularly, but I think it's that same mentality of has moved into, and you alluded to that earlier.
The Netherlands is one of the seven countries that allows abortion after 20 weeks. There's only seven in the world.
It's remarkable.
China is one of them, and North Korea is one of them. Mm. So we are in the same league.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the weight of that and life, even as we talked about, you know, just the preciousness of life. Is life in the womb all the way through life to death? So, I mean, that even affects today. I mean, I think we've seen such an abortion movement of the devaluing of life that we take that to the end of life now and say, well, this is mercy, right? We are taking the life of somebody and that's merciful. And that's not merciful. We would, as good believers, we say life is precious, and that's in the hands of God to do such things. But
and suffering is not suffering is a part of life, and biblical worldview teaches us that that our goal in life is not to have an absence of all suffering. Death does not killing oneself does not morally supersede suffering. I don't know if I said that correctly, but
well,
that suffering is a part of life and is a part of the biblical
and
worldview.
And we do everything to avoid that.
Correct.
In our culture. Yeah, absolutely everything. So where do we go? What do we do? How does the church respond? Why has the Catholic Church responded so well and the Protestant Church hasn't? And what do we do as a church? And what do we do even, maybe to make it specifically, like, okay, we have this outrageous law that's just passed in New York, but however it is going in, I want to say
Albuquerque, you can
five
get a
other
false
states.
Sure, yep, absolutely.
And Washington, D.C.
Well, closest to, right, not even closest, Denver, L.A., Albuquerque, that is technically allowed. Because, like I said, there's no oversight to actually what's happening. Mm. In Philadelphia, I don't think anybody would have thought full-term abortions were happening, but Gosnell was doing them, as we learn. So the church's response is to hate abortion, but love women. And love and try to understand what women are going through to help them through the difficult decisions that they're making.
In the church, there comes with a whole lot of shame. The fact that the fact that I can do an abortion, nobody has to know about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And particularly, that's not going to have to come out in the church. And so maybe there's some other things that are going on behind the scenes there of why I finally get to that point of needing to go through an abortion.
Right, and that's silent sin reeks that, I mean, we could talk about pornography in the church. I mean, we can talk about a lot of silent sins, and abortion is one of them. You know, so how do you alleviate pornography in the church? How do you alleviate a lot of the silent sins that are happening in the church? It's the same discussion.
Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to the model of Christianity that's outlined for us in the Bible. When it comes to unity and it comes to discipleship and it comes to all these things, you can donate to a cause. You can, you know, like you said, do sidewalk education, things like that, which are so important. You know, I don't want to undermine those at all, because they're so important that we do donate to these causes, that we do have, you know, Christians who go out and do these sidewalk educations. But I think the effective change, how we make the world a better place, is through these, again, just like we said in the beginning, through these relationships, through these friendships. You know, someone who has a deep relationship and understanding with someone is going to be the person who is best placed to affect change in sin. And so just like, you know, for pornography or anything else, you build accountability, you build friendship, you build strong ties. It can feel so almost liberating to, I remember when this happened in New York and this law became public, and I just thought, what can I do? And I really grieved for a week, you know, just a long time of just, what can I do? And so I went and I found these causes and, you know, I donated money, and there is this temptation to go, check the box. You know, I donated to the cause. You know, I patted someone on the back and I put a post on Facebook, and now I can go about my day. And it's not really, that's not really the solution. You know, I mean, the money I donated, I'm sure will be used great, you know, as long as you're really researching the causes that you're donating to. And the post on Facebook, I'm sure some friends of mine probably saw that post and where I saw it got shares and people were encouraged to spread the word about what was happening. I called my dad, who's an Oklahoman now, but was raised in New York. And I was saying, New York never really gets out of your blood. And, you know, I talked to him about, you know, what did he think about this, and his shock and disappointment and grief that came from that. But ultimately, what I do a month from now, what I do a year from now, what do I do going forward is to continue to build these relationships with people who are out there in the world. Continue to just put my arms around people, invite people to my circle, and not just for the sake of, oh, I think that person might be considering an abortion, I'm going to go be friends with them. But it's mm-hmm. much before that, you know, mm-hmm. with the case with this young teenage girl that my wife had a hand in, that relationship started when she was a child, you know?
You know, one of the things I think of too, and Carr, you probably have some other suggestions as well, but I think a really simple thing is vote. One of the reasons what changed in New York just recently was the midterm elections mm-hmm. that finally turned the tide. They had been working for well over a decade on getting I'm not making this a political thing, but they were working on trying to get the Democrats in, and it just changed just this past year, just last month. And they had been working for such a long time, and now they finally had the votes. Mm. And that is what turned the decision in New York for why they passed that bill. It never would have passed.
I agree, and I think there's definitely a place for that. My thinking, I guess, from what I do, I have that worldview in what I do, is a more ground-up approach.
Yes.
In no matter what the law says, mm-hmm. may it be unthinkable in our culture. Mm. No matter what the law says, may it be abhorrent.
Yeah.
Because laws, there's crazy laws on the books that we think are just nutty that nobody even pays attention to. Mm. And so if we can, as a culture, change the way we view abortion, so mm-hmm. it doesn't even matter what a politician does.
Yes. Yes.
They become irrelevant in that whole mm-hmm. scenario. That to me is powerful. And to, so doctrine plays a part, education plays a part. What can you do? Be educated on the issue so you know what you're talking about when you talk about it. Mm. When you talk about able to survive on their own, mm-hmm. when you talk about life and health of the mother, we are talking about financial health, mental health, and not to minimize mental health, but from that, remember the video that I showed you, mm-hmm. it can be very simple as I don't feel able to care for this child.
And that, just to the point real quickly, that was one of the major changes in the New York bill, is that it's not just the life of the mother. So I put
it's
this all in
broadly defined
quotes,
health,
but is health as well. So mm-hmm. that is whatever you want it to be.
Correct.
I can be depressed.
Correct.
Oh, okay. You qualified.
Yeah. Mm. So. And I think the other interesting argument is we don't want these decisions. The opponents would say, we don't want these decisions to be made by men legislatures.
I hear that a lot, yeah.
But instead, we're going to have them be made by predominantly men, doctor abortionists. Mm. There's a growing number of women doctors, but it's still predominantly men. Mm-hmm. And so they say that there's a discussion between their... Really? There's a discussion? Mm-hmm. I just don't see the process happening the way that it's viewed in the culture. So be educated about what you're speaking about and be grounded in the word. Mm. I know God does not save us because of our doctrine. Mm. He saves us by grace through faith. But our doctrine helps us live our life in a more freeing and joyful and complete way. And so that's how doctrine helps. And that we're able then to help somebody else instead of saying... Whatever you decide to do is okay with me because I'm your friend and I'll support you. That is a lonely, lonely place for a woman to be. If her boyfriend says that, if her husband says that, if her friends say that, if her family say that, whatever you decide. It sounds supportive, but it's a pseudo support because it's really hands off.
It's a cop out.
It's a cop out, yeah. Back away. You're alone. Mm-hmm. This is a decision I'm not even going to help you with because it's your decision. It's your body. How lonely.
But, so just that's what we hear constantly, and not even just in the realm of abortion, but in a lot of these hard decisions. Whatever you decide.
You got it. Whatever you decide.
Sexuality is a massive issue today. Well, whatever you decide, wherever you come out.
Put yourself in that position of your wife telling you she's pregnant, and then your response is not, praise the Lord. Thank you for this blessing.
Yeah.
Whatever you decide. What? There's a decision? And it's now on me without you? I thought we were in this together. You see all the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of these people who are encouraging this kind of stuff are not invested whatsoever. You know? It's like, oh, I'm for women. I want to love on women. Mm. Same like you're saying with homosexuality, transgender, all these things. They have no, like I keep talking about relationship. Someone who has a true relationship with someone does not invite destruction to their friends. Mm. They're not going to be there to pick up the pieces when everything falls apart. They're not going to be there for the emotionally destroying and all the ramifications that come from that. I recall a guy preaching, in the same genre as the guy who was talking about how he got his gender reassignment surgery. He says, everyone supported me. Everyone told me to do it. He said, after I had it, I was suicidal. I was depressed. Mm-hmm. I had mutilated myself. And he said, no one was there at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just no investment. And so people who say, and I support women's right, you know, pro-abortion, go, you know, take care of yourself. They don't care about that woman.
Well, they care in the only way that they know how. Mm. And I would say that the unbeliever is blinded and masked, right? The Bible tells us that there is a...
Paul talks about the veil over their eyes. Mm. So unless God removes the veil...
Right. So in their way, they think that they are being supportive and they think they are being loving. And that abortion doctor really honestly thinks he's helping women. Mm-hmm. So our job is not just to support the women, but also to love the sinner and help them out of their sin. Mm-hmm. If there's plenty of abortion doctors you can look up. There's one on Live Action that's done a lot of abortions who changed his mind, is now an advocate for life. So that can help happen too. Mm-hmm. So just to be able to encourage people out of their, it all comes back to the gospel. It has to come back to the gospel.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we make it like, oh, the gospel's so simple. Give me something more, I don't know, not more intellectually stimulating. There is nothing more intellectually stimulating than the gospel and what that looks like and living it out. Mm-hmm. There's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to, you know, I guess I feel like I really feel like a broken record, but it's that vertical piece before the horizontal.
Right.
Yeah.
And getting that right with God.
Yeah.
Your horizontal relationships as opposed to your vertical relationship with God.
You've got to have that vertical relationship with God in place if I'm going to have an effect in the horizontal, if I'm going to be able to care for both the center and care for those who are struggling in decision makings, and the horrible, really the sin that has brought them to the place where they're having decisions to make. Is because of sin that has brought them to that place. But how do I care for that, and how do I come alongside? And
and the way that you love them is to understand that is you. You are a sinner.
That's right.
You are saved by grace, and not by your doctrine, and not by your works, and not by some pseudo perfect lifestyle.
That's right.
They are you.
That's right.
And only but by the grace of God. And so that's how you love somebody else.
One beggar telling another beggar where
to
find bread.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Just that we're all on the same plane at the foot of the cross.
Right.
You know, it's flat ground there.
Yes. It's not productive to say those women that do that, or I can't believe women would do that, or just to separate. You separate yourself, right? Because judge not means you're separating yourself from them. And so if you come alongside of them and say, I might have done the same thing in your position, I don't know, but by the grace of God, he has shown me this. Let's talk about life. Mm. Let's talk about what your options are. Let's talk about, you know.
And Kari, I think that's even maybe the other piece that I started with in part of this, is how do we respond to those so that we're not coming across as you wicked, evil, terrible, person.
Yes, but I am too, a wicked, evil, and terrible person.
So even as I'm saying, like, what you are, just like me. And so, but how do we as a church come alongside without, we can post a meme, right, that is so, I don't know, I guess I see the things out there on social media or whatever that is condemning, rightfully condemning abortion, but at the same time, I think there's the imbalance of that isn't considering the one who has gone through that process and is now carrying the weight, and now just what that adds to their shame. And so my heart is for the one who's suffering, and obviously wanting to stop abortion, obviously, but trying to find the balance in that. So, and maybe that's a big piece of it, Kari, is coming alongside and saying, I love that of, you know, gosh, if I was in your shoes, I may have decided the same thing. I'm no different, in other words. But this is what God has revealed, and I want to walk with you. And I will be with you, as you're talking about, Bryce, of I will be with you in this. Let's do this. Let's make that decision, and let's look at what God does in the process of this. Watch what God does. I know it's a terrible situation right now. I know you're suffering. I know you're going to get a whole lot from your boyfriend's going to walk out on you, and your parents are going to be so upset, or, you know, all those different things. And I'm thinking of the counseling chair that I was in downtown, and I know those things are going to fall apart, but God knows, and that life was not a mistake. God cares about that life, and he will carry you through this. Let us help you. Anything else to add to that?
I think the church can also provide programs. I'm not advocating a whole ton of programs, but there are ways that we can come alongside in a structured manner, such as a Bible study or a group, to walk through any kind of freedom from sin, or freedom from the regret and feelings of remorse and waste, and walk along somebody in whatever that sin is, so that they can heal. So I think that's one thing that churches can do. And I've seen that in other churches be powerful when the focus is on the gospel. It is sin like any other, but it is it is unique in its way because it does end the life of somebody, you know, it does end the life of somebody else. So yeah. I don't want to make it seem like all it's the worst sin in the world.
Right.
It's sin, but the way that you process and heal from that can be unique.
Yes.
And so the church can offer some structured programs to heal.
Hmm. How do you even get somebody involved in one of those? Because it's a pretty big step to say, "Oh yeah, I'll go to that group." No.
People. I have a good friend that has moved, but she offered that in her church,
mm-hmm.
She had a good group of women that were willing to go,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a matter of normalizing
mm-hmm.
and showing that it's okay and accepting that, yes, people do need to heal from this.
And that taking the risk is worth it.
Right.
You know, I take the risk. You know, we just keep quiet on whether that's abortion, whether that's pornography, whether mm-hmm. that is whatever those secret sins are that are so devastating
mm-hmm.
To our soul.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep quiet about that because we've got to put a certain front up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with respectable sins. You know, oh yeah, I gossiped. I used the Lord's name in vain. I did white lie. You know, we have respectable sins, as Jerry Bridges calls them. And so those are fine. But when we get beyond those, you know, lists, they become secret.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we go underground.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no outlet. There's no place where I feel safe and no place where I mean, take a risk on that. Man, I'm going to be rejected. I'm going to have this, and this happen. And wow. So it's risky.
Yeah.
But watch what God does. If you were to step out with somebody who loves the Lord
mm-hmm.
And is walking with God and you say, man, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we know from the numbers that this is a pervasive problem in the church. I think we think of it as a unbeliever problem. This is a problem just like sexual sin. Where there's sexual sin, there are babies. Sex leads to babies.
Yes.
Mm.
Shocker. And so where there's sexual sin, there's also these kind of dilemmas. And
you know what that number is in the church?
I don't. I wish I had that on the tip of my tongue, but I don't.
I knew that at one point, yeah. But it is very high.
I know from my own experience in talking with women, most of them identified as Christian. Now we can parse out what that means,
yeah.
But it is a problem of the church.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I think, too, is that speaking of church, is that it's so many times we assume that, you know, these things are being handled.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't speak up. We don't build those relationships. We don't bridge those gaps and we don't get outside of our comfort zone. And I think a lot of times too, for Christians within the church is you find yourself surrounded by a Christian community. You know, you surround yourself with your small group people and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be lulled into a false sense of security as to what actual sin exists, like mm-hmm. because they're secret sins. And so it's easy to sit down in a group of people and go, oh yeah, like Jeremy was talking about the other day in his sermon, it's like, I'm probably the only one who has this problem, so I'm not going to talk mm-hmm. about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I see it with youth students where I'm like, oh, this is a good group of kids. They're probably not dealing with sexual sin or, mm-hmm. you know, all these other, and then you get in a small group, you start talking, you go, oh, no, I assumed incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be speaking about these things. We need to be making them public.
Kari, would you pray for mm-hmm. Listeners? And there's, I don't know who all is listening, but those who maybe are carrying weight, others who are making decisions, others who, and I think it's one of those challenging podcasts and topics. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to pray
mm-hmm.
for us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's pray. Father, we just thank you for this time of discussion, and we just pray your grace upon it, that whoever is listening today will not feel judged, will not feel separated or disconnected, but instead know your love, your love without compare. You are gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in love. Let the listeners know that, Father. I pray that as a church, we would not separate ourselves from dealing with sin, which is the biggest problem we have, Father, is sin. Help us to be able to talk about this together as a group, in structure, in formats, in personal formats, however you bring that to us, Father. We also thank you that we are not God and we do not have to be, that we instead point to you, mm-hmm. and that we don't have to leave this podcast thinking, I need to do, but instead let us sit at your feet, Father, and listen to what you have to say to us. Remember who we are in you, saved by grace, not by work, so that no one can boast, and then do your will. Let us equip your church, and I just pray your favor upon the United States and our church. Capital C Church. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We thank you and praise you that you deign to talk and listen to us, Father. Who are we that the God and Father that created the entire universe is here with us as we speak? Mm-hmm. We just thank you and praise you for that and for Jesus, your Son, who died for us on the cross, mm-hmm. in Jesus' name and for his sake. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Kari. Thank you for being here. And if anybody wants to talk and needs to talk, please reach out to us. We welcome conversation with you, and we'd love to pray with you. If anything else, our God cares, and God cares about what you're dealing with and what you're going through. And so we get the privilege to be able to come before the throne of God. So, Kari, again, thank you. Bryce, good to have you again. And we will talk to you all next time on the next podcast. All right. Blessings to you.